Does anybody here remember a movie called Cool Hand Luke? Okay, just about everybody. One of the best phrases that came out of that movie, what we've got here is failure to communicate. And it was the captain, Cool Hand Luke, he was in a chain gang, and the captain was just ruled with a rod of iron over everything that was going on. And Luke did something that he wasn't supposed to do, and after getting all the instructions, and that's what he told Luke. He said, what we have here is failure to communicate. Misunderstandings are the product of a failure to communicate. Now, we were in the sermonette, we're talking about how to communicate with God in prayer. We don't have much problems communicating with God. He can read our minds, he knows what we're trying to say. But that doesn't always work between us as individuals, as human beings. And as I was trying to think of a sermon to give while I came down, I thought, you know, this is a sermon that I think everybody can benefit from. I know I benefited from it. It's been something I've keep reminding myself of time and time again. And so it's a situation, because all of us have probably had a misunderstanding with somebody in our past. It happens, and it's sad, because sometimes relationships are broken over misunderstandings. The wounds sometimes that they cause are very difficult to heal, if they can be healed at all in some circumstances. Misunderstandings are at the root Christians leaving the church many times, or going elsewhere to fellowship. All it takes is just some miscommunication. And it's a tool that Satan loves to exploit whenever possible among his people, or among God's people. Sometimes they can occur when people are 100 miles apart. Email is one of the biggest ways of misunderstanding. You just cannot put your thoughts and concepts into words on paper. So a lot of times, that's how it happens, through an email. So you can be hundreds of miles apart. Phone calls, can email, sermons, sermonettes. Hopefully I'll be able to communicate and nobody will misunderstand me today. You know, I pray about that. But these are all potential sources of misunderstanding between us. Sometimes even our silence can be misunderstood and affect relationship. You know, just because we didn't say something, somebody misunderstood our intent and why we kept silent. And it happens. Many specialists in family relations, they say that the number one problem in marriages, it's not sex, it's not money, it's not children, it's a lack of communication between husband and wife. Switch over my pad here. In his book, Communication, Key to Your Marriage, A Practical Guide to Creating a Happy, Fulfilling Relationship, and that is a mouthful for the title of a book, but there's this marriage and family counselor, Dr. Herman Wright, he gives some insights into why misunderstandings so often occur. He explains that according to communication specialists, there are actually six messages that come through when we talk to one another. Say six messages? Well, there's what you mean to say. You have a concept of what you're trying to say in your head. And then there's what you actually say, which sometimes is not the same as what you meant to say. Then there's what the other person hears, which could be completely different. And then what the other person thinks they hear. Number five is what the other person says about what you said. And the sixth is what you think the other person said about what you said. I mean, is it any wonder that there misunderstandings happen when there's so many conversations going on and just one bit of communication? It reminds me of a quote I heard a long time ago. It was an author. His name was Robert McCluskey. And I've tried to memorize this, and I get it mixed up every time I do, but his quote is, I know you believe you understand what you think I said, but I'm not sure you realize that what you heard is not what I meant. And it describes the whole concept of communication. We get these things mixed up, and so, and that can lead to misunderstandings. I mean, have we not all found ourselves in situations where we've either misunderstood someone else or they misunderstood us? I know I have too many times in my life. Maybe I misread their motives for something that they had said or done, even their actions, or even been on the receiving end of a misunderstanding and had our words or actions questioned by somebody else. It's vitally important to examine ourselves, look within to determine if we've caused any misunderstandings. I mean, have we been the culprit behind a misunderstanding for somebody else with our brethren? If so, we have instructions for our master to do something about that. In the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus told us in Matthew 5, verses 23 through 24, he says, therefore, if you bring your gift to the altar and there remember that your brother has something against you, something was a result of a misunderstanding, leave your gift there before the altar and go your way. First be reconciled to your brother and then come and offer your gift. So for the rest of the sermon this afternoon, what I would like to do is explore how do misunderstandings occur. What causes misunderstandings? Then we'll look at few keys to avoid misunderstandings in the future. And that's why I think that we can all benefit from this, because you know, the more we understand this concept, the more we can alleviate any potential for misunderstandings with others in the future. Now, a little basic background on the causes of misunderstanding. This is all misunderstandings basically begin the very same way. First, an innocent act, word, or motive is misinterpreted by someone who, based on his or her perception, then becomes offended at the innocent person. This goes back to what I was talking about in the conversation that occurs. There's what you meant, or what you hear, and what you think you hear. What we think we hear is based upon our perceptions, and our perceptions are reality to us. So what we think we hear is basically what happens. How are our perceptions formed? We had a wonderful sermon many, many years ago by an elder in our congregation up in St. Louis. And he talked about this thing called a morass. A morass is basically a bog or a swamp or a marsh, you know, something you got to get through, something very difficult to navigate. And he says we all have this morass in our minds. This morass is based upon our life's experiences, the things that we've gone through, the things we've learned in life. So everything we hear gets filtered through all that morass, and then we hear what we think we're going to hear, and based upon our life's experiences. So there's many examples of that type of thing actually occurring in Scripture. We can see examples of this. And that resulted in actions that actually could have been avoided. 1 John chapter 6, verses 22 through 59, Jesus was talking with his disciples, and he's speaking to the crowd about him being the bread of life, and that they have to eat of him to have eternal life. Now, the people are hearing this, and their perceptions, I mean, they're probably thinking cannibalism, just things that just didn't make sense to them. And so they were having difficulty. In John 6, verse 51, we read Jesus' words here. He says, I am the living bread which came down from heaven. If anyone eats of this bread, he will live forever. And the bread that I shall give is my flesh, which I shall give for the life of the world. So he's talking about his flesh being the bread of life. And people were misunderstanding what he was trying to say. Verses 60 through 61 here, it says, therefore, many of his disciples, when they heard this, said, this is a hard saying. Who can understand it? So there you have the problem. They did not understand what Christ was trying to say to them. And when Jesus knew in himself that his disciples complained about this, he said, does this offend you? Some were offended by his words. Based upon their perceptions, filtering this conversation through the morass in their minds, their life's experiences, what they've been through, They thought he was speaking literally about taking of his flesh. And verse 66 says, from that time, many of his disciples went back and walked with him no more. We had a problem. We had a misunderstanding. And people left and never followed Christ again after that. Another incident that I just find really interesting is it occurs back in the book of Joshua. When the Israelites began their conquest of Canaan, the tribes of Reuben, Gad, and half of Manasseh, they wanted to settle on the east side of the Jordan River. They didn't want to go over to the west side where the promised land was. So that's where they wanted to settle. They were done with everything. They just wanted to settle there. And the request was accepted. But there was a condition. They had to help secure the land of Canaan with their fighting men before they would be given the right to go back to the east side of the Jordan River and settle. So when the Israelites began their conquest, the tribes of Reuben, Gad, and half of Manasseh, they had that request. And over 7 years, it took 7 years before they completed the conquest of Canaan. And when those 7 years were over, they were granted what was promised to them. They were granted their leave to return to the other side of the Jordan River. So let's pick up the story here in Joshua 22. Joshua 22 will begin in verse 1. It says here, then Joshua called the Reubenites, the Gadites, and half the tribe of Manasseh, and said to them, you have kept all that Moses, the servant of the Lord, commanded you, and you have obeyed my voice and all that I commanded you. You have not left your brethren these many days, up to this day, but have kept the charge of the commandment of the Lord your God. They were faithful. They stayed there for 7 years and helped conquer the land. They did their job, and they obeyed the commands that they were given perfectly. And verse 4, and now the Lord your God has given rest to your brethren as he promised them. Now therefore return, go to your tents and to the land of your possession, which Moses, the servant of the Lord, gave you on the other side of the Jordan. But Joshua gives them a warning. Verse 5, he says, take careful heed to do the commandment and the law which Moses, the servant of the Lord, commanded you, to love the Lord your God, to walk in his ways, to keep his commandments, to hold fast to him, and to serve him with all your heart and with all your soul. What he's basically telling them, don't forget who your God is just because you'll be over the river and away from the rest of us. Don't forget God. We drop down to verse 10 here. Verse 10, and it says, and when they came to the region of the Jordan, which is in the land of Canaan, so they were still on the west side of the Jordan River, getting ready to cross back over to the east. So the children of Reuben, the children of Gad, and half the tribe of Manasseh built an altar there by the Jordan, a great, impressive altar. But here they get to the river, and they start building this altar to God. Now the children of Israel heard someone say, behold, the children of Reuben, the children of Gad, and half the tribe of Manasseh have built an altar on the frontier of the land of Canaan in the region of Jordan on the children of Israel's side. So rumors start spreading. And that's how a lot of misunderstanding happens. Rumors start spreading. And when the children of Israel heard it, the whole congregation of the children of Israel gathered together at Shiloh to go to war against them. Those that were remaining in Canaan feared it was a rival altar to the one that was sanctioned by God in Shiloh, and that it would become an idolatrous altar in the years to come. They felt these tribes had already deserted God. They hadn't even crossed the river yet, and they were already turning to false idols, is what they were thinking, based upon life's experiences. Verse 16. Thus says the whole congregation of the Lord, what treachery is this that you have committed against the God of Israel to turn away this day from following the Lord, and that you have built for yourselves an altar that you may rebel this day against the Lord? That was what they believed was happening, based upon rumors, based upon a misunderstanding, based upon lacking the information that they needed to understand. what was the true purpose of this altar? Continue down in verse 23. The Gadites, the Reubenites, and the Manassehites that were going over there, they said, if we have built ourselves an altar to turn from following the Lord, or if to offer on it burnt offerings or grain offerings, or if to offer peace offerings on it, let the Lord himself require an account. And tell him, let God judge us in our intent for what we're doing here. Yeah, we meant no harm, is basically what he's saying. He says, but in fact, we have done it for fear. That's why they're building this altar. For a reason, saying, in time to come, your descendants, talking about the ones that would be in Canaan, may speak to our descendants, saying, what have you to do with the Lord God of Israel? You're people on the other side of the river. What have you got to do with God and with our people? It says, for the Lord has made the Jordan a border between you and us. You children of Reuben and the children of Gad, you have no part in the Lord. So your descendants would make our descendants cease fearing the Lord. Therefore we said, let us now prepare to build ourselves an altar, not for burnt offerings nor for sacrifice, but that it may be a witness between you and us and our generations after us, that we may perform the service of the Lord before him with our burnt offerings, with our sacrifices, and with our peace offerings, that your descendants may not say to our descendants in time to come, you have no part in the Lord. They had a purpose. It wasn't to disobey God. They wanted to make sure that in the future they would be remembered as being part of Israel. They didn't want to be discarded and thinking, oh, you're some people on the other side of the river. Thankfully, they spoke to one another about this. And they avoided a deadly civil war, right? They just finished 7 years of conquering Canaan, and they almost went into a civil war in their infancy as a nation. Verse 33, we continue there, it says, so the thing pleased the children of Israel, and the children of Israel blessed God. They spoke no more of going against them in battle to destroy the land where the children of Reuben and Gad dwelt. The children of Reuben and the children of Gad called the altar witness, for it is a witness between us that in the Lord, that the Lord is God. Misunderstandings happen so quickly and so innocently. Now, maybe those tribes could have said something to the children of Israel before they left, saying, hey, we're going to build this altar. This is the reason behind it. You know, it would have helped for them to explain that up front, and they would have avoided any of this misunderstanding to begin with. So, you know, I just found that it was just a perfect example of how innocent acts misinterpreted by a lack, a failure to communicate, can lead to deadly consequences. I mean, probably not many of us have had misunderstandings that have turned deadly. At least I pray that it's never happened. But I would imagine some of us have lost friends over misunderstandings. Or even had a friend turn into an enemy because of a misread word, a misunderstanding of some type, and a misunderstood action or motive. So what can we do as people of God to avoid misunderstandings occurring between us? You know, we don't want any more factions. We don't want any more splits. We don't want people, you know, attacking one another in some way. Well, there's basically two people, two sides involved in this. There's those that speak, which would be like me up here speaking today, and those that listen. You're sitting out there listening. So there's things I have to do, and there are things that you have to do as hearers. For the listening side, or for the speaking side, the ones that start the communication, the important thing is to speak clearly. As I said, there's two parts of the communication up front: what you mean to say, and what actually comes out of your mouth, and what you actually say. Sometimes those are not the same thing, and it just seems so basic to say that just speak clearly. But many of us often, sometimes, might get vague, unclear, ambiguous messages. So we need to take time to think about what we want to say, And then we take our time in saying it well. What you say should be what you intended to say. We need to eliminate that second part of the communication so that what you say is actually what you really, truly meant to say. That, so that eliminates one of those six conversations that are going on. I like to use an example. My wife, Sherry. Ralph, could you take care of dinner tonight? Yeah, sure. I'll take care of that. So I run out and pick up a carton of White Castle, some hamburgers. Now, is that what she meant? I bring those home, I'm not going to be on good terms with her. But she didn't give me enough instructions. You know, the other, could you take out the trash? Yes, I can do that. Hours later, it's still not out. Didn't I ask you? Yeah, I'm going to get to it. You didn't say right now. You know. So this is how misunderstandings happen, because we don't speak clearly. We don't give detail on what we're expecting when we say what we're saying. We all make that mistake of thinking that the other person in our conversations exactly understands exactly what it is we're saying. You know, I can't read your mind. You know, I don't know what it is you truly want. Make sure you define it. Speak clearly. And don't leave any questions, any doubts as to what the intent of what you're trying to say means. That White Castle thing did not go over very well. So, though I love White Castle. We all make that mistake, you know, as I said, that we think we understand exactly what the other person said. And it's not always the case if we don't make ourselves clear. So that's our responsibility on the origin of the communication side. Second half comes from the hearing. And to me, this is probably one of the most important, because this is the way to avoid a lot of misunderstandings. We have to listen actively. We have to really, truly pay attention. I mean, how many times have we seen people in conversations and somebody's busy on their phone and, oh yeah, okay, you know, and they're not truly listening to what the other individual is saying. I want to tell you a story, and it's not about a man named Chad, who has a poor mountaineer, barely kept his family fed. But I want to tell you a story about a young man named Bubba. Bubba was on the high school football team. Their team, the Panthers, they were playing against their rivals, the Vikings. And this was the first time in 3 years that the Panthers had a shot at beating the Vikings in their football game. And when Bubba went out to the huddle, his mind started wandering before he ever got there. His mind was on the bus ride home after the game. Either he would be reliving the greatest high school game ever, or he would be sulking in his seat. There was 31 seconds to go in the game. The Vikings, the other team, had the lead 21-17. The Panthers had the ball at the 9-yard line on fourth down. The Panthers needed this touchdown to win the game. Bubba was busy soaking up the moment, thinking about that ride home. A Skyler called the play. On two, Skyler said. Bubba missed the play. I wing it. I figured Porter's gonna go up the middle. Bad guess. Bubba pulls right. The defensive rusher blasts through, forcing an interception. Final score, Vikings 28, Panthers 17. That bus ride home was the longest ride of Bubba's life. Bubba learned an important lesson that day. It pays to listen, and it pays to listen actively. You've got to be engaged in the conversation. Listen to what's being said. If we want to avoid misunderstandings, that's what we have to do. We have to listen actively. If you aren't confident that you understand what another person has said, you ask questions to make sure that you understand. You know, when my wife would ask me to pick up dinner. Well, what would you like? You know, is there something in particular you want? You know, or do you want me to go in there and try to cook? That would be a mistake. But you know, get more information. Make sure that you understand exactly what it is that the other person is saying. Rephrase what they've said, and then ask them if that's what they were attempting to say. You know, is this what you meant? Just kind of repeat back what you heard, based upon the morass in your mind, what you think you heard. Repeat that back and ask them, and they may say, no, that's not what I meant. But at least you're on that mission of getting the correct information. I believe that's probably one of the most important points in avoiding misunderstanding. Instead of misunderstanding, we have to seek understanding. A few years ago, Mr. Shaby, he spoke at the Winter Family Weekend. He gave a sermon that weekend talking about several books that had influenced his life. And one of the books that he mentioned was Stephen Covey's book, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. And he said habit number 5 was the one that really stuck with him over the years. And that habit number 5 is seek first to understand, then to be understood. So we want to understand the other individual before we try to get them to understand what we're trying to say in a conversation. This is a critical skill in avoiding misunderstandings. We have to first understand what the other person is trying to say before we can seek to be understood ourselves. This goes again back to that morass that we have in our mind that everything gets filtered through. We hear what's being said, but are we understanding what is being said after it's been filtered through our life's experiences? Some of you may remember a Simon and Garfunkel song from back in the 70s, late 60s or so, called The Boxer. And there was one line in that that says, a man hears what he wants to hear, and he disregards the rest. Sometimes that's what happens in a conversation we have. We hear what we want to hear, and then we just throw everything else away. We just get rid of it. And that can lead to misunderstandings because that may not be what the other person intended. Seek first to understand, then to be understood. As part of our training in the ministry, we've recently received a couple of lessons from the home office. One of them was called Embracing Visitors While Upholding the Truth, and the other one was The Power of Purposeful Visits. In both of these documents, I was impressed to see that two of the keys in this was seek to understand. Make sure, you know, when you're visiting with somebody, you understand. Don't just go there to talk to them. Seek to understand situations. When we got visitors and they might be bringing up things that we don't believe or something like that, try to understand where they're coming from first before we try to tell them our wisdom. You know, how many times in a conversation are we busy preparing our response to what the person is saying before they ever get finished with it? So, you know, my thoughts are more important, you know, so hurry up and finish speaking so I can tell you what I think about this. Rather than seeking to understand what the individual is saying, we're already preparing our response. Again, seek first to understand. This requires active listening on our part, seeking clarification on what we think we heard. And once we understand the words and meaning of the conversation, then we have an opportunity to be understood with that understanding. James 1, verse 19, kind of lends itself to this principle. James 1:19 says, so then, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift, quick to hear. We've got two ears, one mouth. Seems listening is more important than speaking. Be swift to hear. Listen. Slow to speak. Slow in our response. slow to wrath. Because sometimes what the other person's saying might make us angry. Swift to hear means the implication is an open, teachable spirit. We're willing to listen. We're willing to be taught. The Greek word for swift means to be prompt or ready. We're ready to do this. It doesn't mean we listen quickly and let it go, but that we're always ready. We're prompt to listen. Slow to speak, not jumping at the opportunity to have our words heard, but rather to have a conversation where the other person's trying to tell us something we need to hear them. Slow to wrath. As I said, misunderstandings from not listening and seeking instead to be heard can often lead to frustration or anger. Proverbs 18:2 brings out this concept. It says, a fool has no delight in understanding. We don't want to be fooled, brother. God brings out, a fool has no delight in understanding, but in expressing his own heart. My thoughts, my words are more important than what you may have to say to me. Seek understanding. Now there's this great philosopher that we probably all have seen at one time or another, Henry the Fonz Winkler. And he's credited with saying, assumptions are the termites of relationships. Assumptions. When we jump to conclusions, this is all part of this listening process. When we jump to conclusions, we're making judgments based upon those assumptions. Assumptions that could lead to misunderstandings, a failure to communicate. If something has been said or done when you weren't present, I mean, you maybe weren't there, and all you heard is other people talking and saying, well, so-and-so said this, or they did this, and maybe it was, had something to do with you. If possible, you need to go to that person personally and find out the facts. Get the facts. Don't just take what somebody else has told you. Because once again, those multiple conversations, they may have misinterpreted it. They've relayed that on to you, and you've heard something completely different in your mind, and the whole thing's misunderstood. You ever played that game, telephone, I think it was, back in school, where one person says something, and they pass the information down. By the time it gets to the last person, it's a completely different sentence than what it started out as, because everybody adds to it or takes away from it. Misunderstandings occur that way. Jesus Christ told us in Matthew 18:15, moreover, if your brother sins against you, go and tell him. Don't just listen to what other people say and then get mad about it and not have anything to do with the brother. You go to him. You tell him his fault between you and him. Alone. Not in a crowd, but alone. And if he hears you, you've gained your brother. And that's a hard thing to do, isn't it? If you think somebody's talked about you or done something against you, they have the courage to go and talk to that individual and try to find out the truth of what's going on. That's one of the difficult parts of being a Christian. Nobody said Christianity was going to be easy. We've got to do these things. If it's not possible to talk to the other person, then try to think of some kind of alternative motives. Maybe you've misread them. Misread their meanings. And you've jumped to conclusions and made assumptions that just aren't there. We don't want to be guilty of committing a suicide. And that is an actual word. It's in the Urban Dictionary. A suicide. We can all add that to our vocabulary. Suicide leads to the death of relationships because we end up believing the worst about others rather than believing the best. And have we not all at maybe at one time been guilty of drawing wrong conclusions on the very basis of the tiny scraps of information? I think they were trying to ignore me. They didn't return my text message. They didn't call me back. That's a big one I see. My wife was guilty. Well, I haven't heard anything back from them. I think they're mad at me. No. You don't know what's going on the other end, what they're doing with their life. So we can't just jump to these conclusions that somebody's got it in for you or they're ignoring you. You know, you think, well, how can they be a Christian if they act like that? Aren't we all guilty of sin? 1 John 1:8, if we say that we have no sin, we deceive ourselves and the truth is not in us. We're all guilty of something. Maybe you saw somebody coming out of a bar. They obviously must have a drinking problem. Based on what? Minuscule evidence. We don't know why they were in there. Or your child arrives home late. They must be up to something. That was one I always thought about when my kids did come home one time. What are they up to? But it could have been a traffic jam. Car broke down. It could be something totally innocent. Again, we shouldn't make assumptions. We need to talk to them, find out what's going on, what happened. In conversations with one another, we can assume that we know what the other person is saying without really listening. And that's where we seek to understand comes in again. Leads to the listener operating on false assumptions, leading to misunderstandings, and you end up with a failure to communicate. If we're the victim of a suicide, it's very hard to fight back against false assumptions. Nothing hurts more than being misunderstood by a close friend. And I've had that happen in life. But it does, it hurts. A song I remember from back in the 60s said, friendship is the only beast that's known to bite after it's dead. And it's very true. You know, you lose a friendship and it bites, it hurts. So we don't want to lose friendships over misunderstandings that may occur between us. Avoid thinking the worst about the other person. While some people will want to deliberately harm us, I'm not saying that there aren't people that want to do that. Few people are evil incarnate. Okay? There's just not many people that are just purely evil. So to keep from misjudging others and exaggerating their flaws, think about what you know about them historically. Well, I've known this person for years. This is out of... doesn't fit with their patterns in life. So think about those things. What are they usually like? Give them the benefit of the doubt. We're told, you know, by Paul in Philippians 2:3, let nothing be done through selfish ambition or conceit, but in lowliness of mind, humility, thinking of ourselves as a very humble people. Let each esteem others better than himself. Think of the other person as a better person. Humble ourselves. Think the best. Don't think the worst about another. Philippians 4:8. Well, this is one we've probably heard many, many times. Finally, brethren, whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of good report, if there is any virtue and if there's anything praiseworthy, meditate on these things. Think about the good things in a person, rather than think about the worst. Give them the benefit of the doubt. And we have to remember that we're not omniscient. We're not God, at least not yet. You can't know everything about another person. You can't read their heart. We leave that to God. Matthew 7, verses 1 through 2, Jesus Christ brings that out. Judge not, that you be not judged. For with what judgment you judge, you will be judged. And with the measure you use, it will be measured back to you. If you want to cast false assumptions on another individual, it's going to come back to you. So as I wrap this up, I'd like to say communication is one of the very foundations of our relationships with one another. We have to communicate with one another at all times. It's how we fellowship with one another. Fellowship's so important. And we don't want to have that failure to communicate, like the captain did with poor Luke. When we have a failure to communicate, we end up with these misunderstandings, which can lead to just a whole lot more trouble. We need to take whatever steps are necessary on our part to make sure that we don't let misunderstandings destroy or scar our relationships with one another. Speak clearly. Make sure that you actually say what's on your mind. And more importantly, as the hearers, we need to make sure that we understand, seek to understand before seeking to be understood, and take the time to truly listen to one another. Are you listening, Bubba? Bubba?